This is Sam, and with me is Lee and Rebecca. And we just wrapped up the, what was the name of that episode again?
El ateísmo en el mundo hispanohablante, atheism in the Spanish-speaking world.
And I want to do a little bit of an interview with you guys and tell you about, talk about the episode a little bit and sort of get your take on it and what the future looks like now that we've kind of dipped our toe into the into second language, for us at least, episodes for the show. So one of the things I noticed when we were working on the TV show was that the atheism visibility movement is a lot bigger than just the Anglophone countries.
Definitely.
Is that there's a lot going on in South America, there's a lot going on in Europe, there's a lot going on in Asia. And Spanish is the second most spoken language in the United States. And it's even the second, even though we have such a large international community here in Seattle, there's the Spanish, I believe, is still the second largest language spoken in the Puget Sound area.
Yes, and I come from a K-12 teaching background, and in any of our other languages, we always have, 70, I think, in my school district, home languages amongst all of the families, but about half of the people who speak a different language other than English at home are Spanish speakers.
Right. And so we thought, while we're on SCAN, and SCAN allows for a lot of foreign language programming, we thought it would be good to address that part of the community as well. Is that the show for us, and I don't know about you guys, since you just hosted it, is we wanted, it's not just a show for atheists, is that we wanted to show atheism to the Puget Sound area.
Absolutely.
And we wanted to talk to people that generally this conversation hasn't reached.
I think, especially since we usually do announcements at the very beginning about local atheist groups that hold events or that that blog or have podcasts, I thought it was really important. And I hope that we do get some attendees that are Spanish-speaking to some of our events. And Lee announced our the Freethought Community's Winter Solstice Potluck that's happening in about 2 or 3 weeks from now, and I'm hoping that we do get some Spanish speakers from that, from the show.
Sure. One of the things is you were very topic-focused, and you guys got a call from, I was really only vaguely aware working on the sound, but apparently we got a call from Argentina.
Yes, yeah. We had someone call from Argentina, and I don't know if he is a regular follower of our show. I didn't quite catch that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was listening to it on the stream, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great.
He wanted to tell us about an out-of-body experience and how he did not interpret it in a religious manner.
Really? That's actually very rare. It seems as people, is that religious symbolism tends to be a part of out-of-body experience.
Or at least aliens.
Or aliens. That's I kind of see a similarity between the aliens coming to save you and the Jesus coming to save you. It seems like a lot of the same story.
And I guess whatever cultural substrate you're in, if you've been watching a lot of X-Files and Fire in the Sky, like, you know, some of my friends and I in the 90s as kids, then maybe you might interpret a febrile hallucination as aliens. But if you're in a Catholic substrate...
Febrile hallucination?
Yes.
Can you help me out with that one?
Having a fever and hallucinating at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay, I thought maybe he was having a fever when you were a kid or something.
No.
I guess that would be fetal hallucination.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things you didn't do during the episode is sort of give us a personal sort of look at how you arrived at atheism or humanism, as the case may be. And, well, fair warning, Becky and I know each other rather well. I've referred to her a few times on the show. But Lee, I know mainly through Tacoma Atheists and through some of the outreach we do there. But I was wondering, kind of give me a personal take on how you arrived at our show today.
Well, it all started with somebody. I will change her name for her protection, but my girlfriend in probably fifth grade, her name was Jill, and she was from a Tennessee Baptist family. And so we would go into the woods and debate, things like if the Ark was literally a true story, and then we would smooch.
Oh, wow.
So I knew from a very young age not only my sexuality, but also that I didn't buy all those fantastic stories because, she was doing her part in trying to convince me, and it just wasn't working. I was already deep into science, and I was always
sounds like she was convincing you of something, though.
Yeah, she got the,
That's one of the, nicest stories of that journey I think I've heard in a while.
Well, and so. I wasn't from a religious family, really. We didn't go to church. My dad wasn't into it, and I now know he's basically an atheist. So
okay.
Well, he wasn't intellectually upfront or conscious about it. I think people didn't used to talk about those things. They just stayed home on Sunday and watched football.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my dad made a big deal about not talking about religion ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no idea, and then finally it was like, yeah, so you're an atheist now. Like, yeah, I'm an atheist. How do you know? How can you not be an agnostic? I'm like, oh, wow. I didn't even know you knew what that word was. And then you, obviously...
I've spent time in many different Spanish-speaking countries, and so just sort of the intersection of religion, and I grew up in the U.S. As a pluralistic, reform-ish Jew, many different backgrounds, sort of many different denominations and experiences within Jewish tradition. So I had the experience of being a minority, a religious minority in the U.S., and then definitely a religious minority in various Spanish-speaking regions. I spent 6 months studying in Santiago, Chile, at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived with a abuelita, my host mother, who's more like a host grandma, and she was very Catholic. And actually, she ended up having a febrile hallucination of me, where I appeared as the Virgin Mary to her. So that was a very funny little interface.
Nice.
with the Catholic tradition.
Fits right in with the call.
You've made vague references to that, but that's the I didn't realize it was actually a fever dream of you as the.
It's something like that. I was at a young point in my Spanish acquisition, so maybe I didn't quite get all of the details, but she just thought it was very funny that a young Jewish girl would appear to her as the Virgin Mary. And I said, well, you know, not actually that funny, since Mary was apparently a virgin, you know, Jew. So,
yeah.
Well, I mean, what we know about South America, especially as I believe you both have traveled to South America extensively or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and I also work in Washington as a Spanish teacher, and many of my students are actually native speakers. I teach native speaking Spanish, like a Spanish language arts class. I've also worked in the American Southwest with, various... doing various jobs in medical assistance and constituent casework and things like that with a large Spanish-speaking population.
Well, I am kind of wondering...
And you in Peru as well.
Yeah.
I am kind of wondering what atheism looks like in those parts of the world. I am incredibly, incredibly local to the United States. I mean, I've been around the country, but I've never had the chance to travel internationally before. So I just like hearing these stories. What is atheism like?
I can say that I met one atheist in Peru. It was a cousin of the family, and we were just walking around the city on, you know, sort of a walking tour. And in the central area, there's a lot of plazas. In every plaza, there's a church. I've been in churches. I've been in cathedrals. After a certain point, they all start to look the same to me. And I'm not particularly interested in the relics or the statues. The architecture, yes, but... You know, so I'd sort of had enough of churches, and...
Architecture does seem to be a soft spot for atheists, as we all
we like
the building.
It's good stuff. but he didn't seem to want to walk in either, and he just asked me at one point what was my religion. It's a common enough question. And I told him, and he was also an atheist, as it turns out.
Wow.
He was a young guy, and he was living in the city, but, you know, part of my excitement in joining this episode was my sense that in a culture that's it's hard to even say it is still majority Catholic, but less and less. Mm-hmm. The evangelical movements are very active and making great inroads.
Mm-hmm.
But in a place that was probably the most overtly Christian place I've ever been, with every taxi and every shop owner having a Bible or a poster on the wall declaring how great God is, again, even in government offices. In that environment, an atheist probably feels sort of isolated. And I imagine even in some Latino families in the United States, to feel that you really don't believe all that stuff and yet be required to go through all of the processes, the confirmation and everything, it must be a very isolating experience. And I felt like, similar to, being gay in a conservative culture, any outreach that we do in communities like that, in cultures like that, to say basically, it's okay that, you know, there are other people who don't believe, and hang in there. Eventually you'll leave home and you can do your own thing.
Right.
I thought that was a valuable thing to put out there in Spanish.
Okay. And
Well, for me, I mean, what is atheism like? Have I ever met any atheists? I don't know that I've met outside of the United States people that we've spoken about atheism. My experience in Santiago, Chile, when I was about 20, was really interesting because my host family was vaguely aware of non-Catholic religions, and the summary was thus. Well, everyone's Catholic. And then you have the Mormones, the Mormons. You have the Evangelicos, the evangelizers that will come. And that includes basically anything that's not Mormon, but is Protestant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have the Judios.
Including the Adventists, yeah.
The Adventists, the yeah. Witnesses. You have the Judios, the Jews, and the Arabes, which by that she meant the Musulmanes, the Muslims. And you have Hindu, which means Indian Hindu, but that was sort of her understanding of things, and
with the usual correlation, sort of nationality religion correlation.
Absolutely, absolutely. The evangelicos, the evangelizers, and or evangelicals, and the Mormons mostly were converts from U.S. missionaries, but definitely that nationality, ethnicity, language, sort of conflation with religion.
Yeah.
Was very much present. One of the things that I've noticed in teaching my native Spanish speakers is that I'm very used to having a lot of the language-based things related to Spanish language, a lot of the holidays, a lot of the naming traditions be very much steeped in Catholic tradition. And more my native Spanish speakers that were born here as bilingual and raised as bilinguals really have very a lot less knowledge than the kids that have been born outside of the U.S. in Mexico.
Would you say that the separation of church and state that we have in the States has anything to do with that?
I think possibly that has something to do with it. I think also possibly living in the Seattle area, which is a less church-going area culturally, mm-hmm. Probably has a lot to do with it. And also, many of my students will not self-identify as Catholic, but as general Christian.
Okay.
And so I think that might have to do with that. And I don't know what their family background is, whether it's Catholic or whether they had been converted to evangelical sects, but the majority of my kids actually don't go to church.
There's a lot of people. I don't know if it's the majority or not, but there are certainly at least half the town that I saw that is nominally, ceremonially Catholic. They'll get married and be buried.
Ethnically Christian, I like to say.
Yeah. They'll do their ceremonies there, but they're just not Sunday people.
Sure.
And they are not going to be the ones who read the Bible regularly mm-hmm. or make any serious effort to understand it.
One of the things I was noticing when we were putting together this episode was the school board, the school chalkboard, image that we used in this episode, which has the picture of the wine and the communion wafer, and how that was actually a state-run school, like any public school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to explain to some folks that in South America there isn't the separation of church and state that we enjoy here.
Absolutely, and some of our callers had alluded to that as well, that there isn't a separation between church and state. There are private schools that may be Catholic run schools or fundamentalist evangelical run schools. I think our caller Josh had alluded to that, having gone to a public mm-hmm. school and then having gone to an evangelical education, primary school. But there really isn't a separation between church and state in many South American countries as there is here.
No, because the countries were founded by conquistadores, and that's part of what they brought with them. They brought the Spanish language and the religion. It's part of the Peruvian flag, the significance of the colors. One of
right.
those represents.
Maybe one of the differences is they were bringing a religion. Some of the folks who came here were bringing their own crazy religion, but
yeah,
trying to get away from something.
And we didn't have separation in the schools in this country until after the Bible riots in New York, where
very
a bunch of Catholics came in and the Protestants were teaching with the Bible in their schools, in their public schools, and big row about that. So I think that kind of brought it to a head that maybe it wasn't a good idea to
that the Bible riots. I learned about that last episode. It honestly, while you were working on last episode, I found that incredibly fascinating.
Yeah.
If I may, one of the things that Leah and I had talked about in pre-show and in preparation was really both of us have had experience in ESL, and there's a large history of ESL or Spanish language teaching to a lot of indigenous folks using the Bible as the main medium for instruction.
And corporal punishment for speaking your native tongue was not uncommon in the mission education system. So as far as the history of language education in the New World, it's interesting to see that model.
One thing I have noticed is this use of the Bible as a linguistic tool. Like in from one of the things I learned from you, that linguists as a language sample often translate the Lord's Prayer.
Yep. That will be sort of a standard thing that we'll do. I tend to actually, if I need to have something to translate, I tend to go to Pledge of Allegiance because I think that's the thing that was like battered into my head a lot.
Do you skip the under God part?
Do I skip the under God part? Well, as a descriptive linguist, I would say that that I would go with the corpus that is available to me, and since it is in common parlance, then I know that you're ribbing at me a little bit.
The missionaries, you know, were leaders in studying strange foreign languages, and they still do a heck of a job, along with, you know, especially the Mormons. Great language training programs to spread their message, and that's part of why, of course, Christianity is the dominant religion of the planet. Is, you know, the economic empire, obviously, and the communications, modern communications, unprecedented, but also this effort to translate this book into all these languages and look at the Witness publications. It's a powerful machine, and anything with that level of marketing is going to find some kind of foothold.
I'll be honest with you, there were some languages I only learned about because there were chick tracts in that language. I had no idea until I saw it. Like, and then I would hit Wikipedia and, oh, what is this about? And I would learn so much. And finally, this is our first dip into other languages for the Ask an Atheist show. This is something that the producers, we feel this was a real success. We got some great phone calls. It looked like a really good show.
I'll have to fill you in on everything that happened.
What I caught was pretty good. I'm not completely ignorant, but only mostly ignorant. And so I kind of wanted to ask you, where do you see this sort of thing going for the show as sort of our two of our resident multilinguists?
Well, I think that definitely as we transition to radio, because in the South Sound there is a significant Spanish-speaking population and speakers of other languages, that it would be really quite reasonable to have some of our major announcements and things like that in little 2 minutes for every show, or for, you know, maybe once a month do segments in other languages. It would require a lot of involvement by me or other speakers of other languages. But I think that I'm really looking forward to what kind of feedback we get through our comments and through emails to see how it went over. Hopefully won't be too critical of our of our Spanish.
Well, I will say I've already received one email. Apparently I misspelled the banner on the webpage.
Oh.
Oops. Sorry. I'll fix that as soon as I can.
It should be fixed by the time this goes live.
So. Oh, well before this goes live. Yeah, that's true. Anything to add to that, or sum it up for everybody?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity, and there's always more to talk about. It's a rich topic, and it's a global topic, and it's a multilingual world. I also would remind any viewers that speaking only one language makes you the exception in this planet. Most people have a couple, so, you know, it's fun, and think about it and just jump in, go somewhere, give it a shot. I mean,
this would be the educators making their.
I'm a language teacher too, and it's not a bad thing, especially for the United States right now. We should really be thinking about it. A little plug.
I tend to agree, even though I'm on the other side of that. I'm the bad guy here.
It's never too old to start.
I understand that. I'm just making it clear that I am the bad guy. So, anything to sum up, Becky? Or?
No, it was really wonderful having Lee as un invitado, our guest, and hope that, you know, we can have some periodic involvement from you. And I really do thank the producers for extending their invitation, even the producers that I know rather well.
Well, thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. I think it was a great episode, and I'd like to take the time to thank the crew for this episode. This was an interesting one. It was a game of telephone in the booth, and it was really hard work, and there were a couple of stressful moments, but I think we persevered, and it looks really good. And thank you guys. And again, once again, thank you to our listeners, and especially those people who are giving us the help, the sort of spank on the butt to make it to radio, and the kind words as well. Thank you, everybody. And you have a good day.
Que les va bien.